Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I'm Rick, he's Dan, and Dan, we are recording live on site at Madison Square Garden. Right now it is midway through the first half between Marquette and St. John's. Marquette leading the way 28-18. Xavier will face the winner of these two teams tonight. We've already seen Georgetown knock off DePaul 70-53, but some other stuff that we want to get to first, and we haven't spoken since a while now. It was before the Villanova game, the last time we talked, and let's start here. Obviously, a lot of talk this week about Xavier coming into this tournament, where they're at. Obviously, Shannon wrote about them needing to pick up the defense. There's been a lot of talk on the message board about the defense. What's your biggest concern coming into the tournament? Is it the defense?
I mean, I think that some of the raw numbers, when you look at them from the last, let's say, 5 to 8 games, certainly you look at the last 5 minutes against Creighton, shipping 29 points. Villanova down the stretch shot a ridiculous percentage to make that game interesting. We've seen it a couple times, some defensive lapses and points, et cetera. However, there are a couple mitigating factors. I think the last 3 games Xavier's played were 3 of the highest possession, highest rate games that they played all season. In addition, in the Creighton and Villanova games particularly, they were playing against teams that were chasing the game and hit an inordinate percentage of their shots late in the game. If Xavier ends up in a shootout this week, I'm not really that concerned, because I think Xavier has shown that they can win shootouts. But I would say if I do have a concern, it has more to do with the matchups that Xavier's likely to face in the first, well, really in all the games here in New York.
Yeah, and I think starting right there, I want to talk about the defense thing for a second, but you mentioned the matchups. And I mean, when you look at either Marquette or St. John's, both of those teams gave them matchup problems. With St. John's, it was a little bit more the guards, the athletic. The Felix Balamu was a tough matchup for Miles Davis. They were able to get into the lane. Duran Johnson made some tough shots in that game, even through good defense. I mean, Remy Abel did a good job on him, I thought, but he still made some tough shots. So I think St. John's is a team that worries you a little bit. As it is, we expect Marquette to win. We think Marquette will get in there. And they're a tough matchup, too, obviously, because of Henry Ellenson. But you talk about the defense. I think I came across on the message board this week as though I didn't think the defense was a problem, and that's not quite what I meant. What I was more saying about this team's defense is that it's been this team's problem since last year. It's been this team's problem, this version of this team's problem coming into this year. We knew that, and yet they've still only lost 4 games because of it. Like, people act like the last 3 games all of a sudden defense was a problem. That's just not true. First of all, in the Villanova game, the third to last game, the defense was very good. Villanova hit a bunch of threes at the end of the game to make the score much more respectable and to get their point total up. We talked about the Creighton game and all the turnovers that happened in the second, or the last really 5-6 minutes of that one that led to their big second half run. But at the same time, the defense was not nearly as good in the Creighton game as it was in the Villanova game. But I think I think about the last Marquette game that Xavier played. They gave up 82 points in that game. That didn't preclude them from the next week then going and playing really well against Villanova. So I guess my point is, yes, this team struggles on defense. Yes, sometimes they're willing to trade baskets too often with the opposing team. But typically, that's after they've already made a big run. That's after they've already gotten 7 to 10 stops in a row and been able to gain a significant lead in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, to me, defense is a concern, but it's not a weakness for this team the way offense or defense is a weakness for a lot of other teams.
Well, and I think you hit the nail right on the head with that statement, which is that if there is a doomsday scenario for this team, it's what happened at Creighton, and it's conceivably what happened a couple years ago. We were talking about this earlier when Xavier played Baylor in the Sweet 16, where they just come out and they're kind of in that mindset. They're sort of in that laid-back mindset. We're just going to ease into the game, and they find themselves down 15, 18, 20 points very, very quickly. We saw that happen at Creighton. We've seen it happen a couple times, actually, this team this year, Wake Forest being an obvious example. But there have been a couple games where Xavier playing lesser opposition at Cintas Center has found themselves behind, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 points in the first half and had to really knuckle down and come back and win. So I think that's that perhaps is a concern. It's something you could see tomorrow, given that Marquette's going to be warmed up. They're going to be used to the floor. They're going to be coming in maybe with a little bit of momentum into tomorrow night's game. So I guess that's a concern, if you want to call it a concern. But when a team is 26-4, tracking a 2 seed, and you're digging for that, and you're talking about your concerns being, well, they give up too many points in games that they have won, and they play to the score a little bit when they're too far ahead, those are good problems, Dan.
Absolutely. One of the legit concerns I would have that I think is more of a concern than the actual defensive problem is this team's ability not to necessarily handle a press, because I think when you've got Edmund Sumner, Miles Davis, Trayvon Blewett out there, they can handle most presses during the game pretty well. My bigger concern is when this team gets a 13-point lead late in a game, you know, it's double digits to where you need to start running some clock. You can't be jacking quick three-pointers, and another team turns on the press. I think when this Xavier team quits looking for the quickest, best shot and really trying to pour it on you, when they start trying to slow it down and run offense, they struggle against pressure defense. And to me, that is the bigger concern. Not that the defense can't hold a team from coming back, but that the offense, when they start trying to run clock and slow things down, that they're a little more susceptible to turnovers and a pressure defense. Now, again, is it a huge concern? Probably not, especially if Edmund Sumner isn't fouled out of the game midway through the second half. But to me, that's a much bigger concern than the actual defensive issues that people have been citing the last few days on the message board.
Yeah, we've seen that happen in a couple games this year. And, you know, against Creighton, it was almost a situation where Xavier went on their big run out of halftime, and they built a lead in the high teens, and it was almost too quick, you know. It was like scoring too fast in football. You leave too much time on the clock. I don't know what the answer to that is, other than the players just need to continue to maintain the same level of aggressiveness, looking for the quickest shot, moving the ball rapidly like they do. I think this team struggles to be conservative. I think when this team is called upon to be conservative, that really isn't their mindset. Their mindset is attack-based. It's always pushing the ball. It's always rotating the ball aggressively. It's taking quick shots when you have them open. And I think the idea of sitting on a, as you say, 12 to 13-point lead with 2 4-minute wars left and just saying, well, let's just manage it for 6 minutes and then we'll put it into the end game, I don't think that's a thing this team particularly is strong at. That being said, again, good problem to have. So let's talk about a little bit about the Big East. Let's talk about the Big East awards that came out earlier this week and today. Let's start out with the positives. So J.P. McCura named Sixth Man of the Year. I made the point on Twitter that I think this could have been J.P. or James Farr had they wanted to go that direction. I think it speaks very highly to the bench production that Xavier's had. The question was asked specifically about James Farr, whether it was a snub that he didn't make honorable mention or second team. In my view, in my judgment on that, is that part of the reason why James Farr didn't make those teams is because Chris Mack has been so excellent and the coaching staff has been so excellent in the way they've used him judiciously. They haven't overexposed him. It would have been very easy coming off some of the big games he had early in the season. You think about against Butler or against Seton Hall, to say, well, this is my guy. I'm going to play him 30 minutes a game. Regardless of how he's playing, this is my starting center. But Chris has never done that. He's continued to judiciously use Jalen, James, Sean when called upon, and has found minutes for all of them. And I think in doing so, he has maximized James's ability to go full tilt when he's on the floor. So, no, I don't think it was a snub for James Farr. I think it's a testament to how well he's filled his role that we're even talking about James Farr as a potential second-team All-Big East player, a Sixth Man of the Year contender.
No question, Dan. And the one thing that you mentioned that I really liked is, if you remember back maybe, I don't know, a month, 2 months ago, when James was really playing at his best, a lot of fans, I think, felt Jalen wasn't living up to potential for this year. A lot of fans thought, why isn't it not James seeing 35 minutes, Jalen seeing 5 to 10 at that point? And the way things have played out, I think you've seen exactly why they never did that, because Chris always felt that that. And like Brian and I said, if this team reaches its potential, for this team to reach its potential, it needs Jalen Reynolds to be a good player. And I think you've seen that as the season has gone on. One, Jalen has picked it up better. But two, as James has had some more struggles, hasn't maybe kept up that same level of play, Jalen has been there and has been able to provide some productive minutes for this team and pick up that slack. But I agree with you. I mean, James, I don't know if I would say he's deserving of second team or he should have been the sixth man of the year, but he was in the conversation. And to be able to say that about James Farr after what we saw from him 2 years ago, even last year, is really phenomenal. I mean, it really just speaks to what I wrote about a week ago after senior day and the progress that James has made. Trayvon made first team, and I think that was a no-brainer. I don't think there was any question about that. But I sometimes wonder if Xavier fans truly appreciate how good Trayvon is. And part of the reason I think that's even a storyline or a scenario for this team that fans wouldn't appreciate him as much is just because of how balanced this team has been throughout this year and the fact that they don't rely on Trayvon to be their Kellen Dunham. They don't rely on him to be their guy that carries this team night in and night out. They're okay if Trayvon only has 6 to 8 points on a given night and someone else, you know, Miles, Jalen, James, whoever, JP, carries the load, they're fine with that. And I think that's something that's kind of unique about this team is that a lot of teams, if their best guy isn't on or doesn't have a good night at all, they've got no shot. If Trayvon doesn't play his best, this Xavier team's fine. They're like, defend, rebound, pass the ball, Trayvon. You'll get involved at some point. We're good whether you score or not.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Trayvon has kept up such a level of excellence since the minute he arrived on campus that you kind of get used to him, you get inured to it, you're not really that surprised, you know, and you're actually more surprised. Often you'll see him, you know, maybe at halftime. This is a two Holloway special, right? At halftime he'd have 2 points and one rebound, and then you look up at the last TV timeout, he's got 21 and, you know, three assists or something like that. That's been a Trayvon hallmark this year. And yeah, you kind of lose sight of how good he is. And yeah, we were talking about this again before the game. Only two guys on that first team are coming back next year, most likely, Josh Hart and Trayvon Blewett. And he's got a great chance to be one of the elite players in this league next season. Final award was the one that is controversial. I usually don't get too tied up in this stuff, except when it's completely egregious. And this strikes me as a bit egregious because you had two separate awards come out in the space of about half an hour this afternoon. You had the Basketball Writers Association named Chris Mack, award Chris Mack the Henry Ibo Award as National Coach of the Year. And then the Big East releases Co-Coaches of the Year, and it's Kevin Willard and Jay Wright. In the judgment of the Big East coaches, Chris Mack did not do one of the two best jobs in the conference, whereas for the writers nationwide, he was the best coach in the country. And I suspect it'll be him, or potentially Tom Crean, maybe Tubby Smith, maybe Bill Self. Those would be your big candidates for the National Coach of the Year from the Associated Press. So what was your take on that, and do you think it's going to have any effect on things? Do you think we'll hear about it at all?
I am so excited about this. I love this. I love that this happened. And honestly, I think it's good for this team. Like, I mean, you may want to say that they don't care about that stuff or whatever, but at the end of the day, the way Chris Mack is, and also the way his players are in that locker room, the J.P. McCurious, the Trayvon Blewett, the Miles Davis, like, well, this is another topic, sort of, but it applies to this as well. I think it's in the same idea here, same theme, is that I was just thinking about this last week when Chris made the comment that last time Xavier lost to Creighton at Creighton, they really celebrated a lot and made Xavier know about it, and Xavier was anxious to get back on the court and play them. He pointed that out. I'm thinking back, other than the Villanova loss when Edmund got hurt, I think pretty much every game Xavier had some type of saying like that in press conferences leading up to the rematch of, hey, we're not happy about this loss. This team showed us up a little bit, and we don't like it. So I think that's how this team takes things like that. And whether that's because they're just not used to being an elite team that's getting beat like that, or whether it's because this team just genuinely has a chip on their shoulder about everything, I'm not 100% sure. I think it's a little bit of both. But I think that is absolutely going to play a role in this tournament, that all these Big East coaches clearly snubbed Chris Mack. And let's be clear, Dan, this isn't Chris Mack wasn't the coach of the year in the Big East. This was, we do not like Chris Mack, and we are not voting for him as coach of the year. Because it's a no-brainer. This isn't like a little bit of a snub. This is like, blatantly, we're telling you we do not like you. Now, whether this is because J.P. McCura dunked on Butler at the end of the game and he caused Chris Mack coach of the year, I don't know. But it's very clear that the rest of the Big East sent Chris Mack a message with this award. And I love it. I think it's hilarious. I can't wait to see what comes out of it. I hope Coach Mack comments on it after one of these games. But even if not, I expect a motivated performance by Xavier because of this. And I think his players will, if nothing else, at least let us hear about this.
I do think that it fits kind of the historical image of Xavier basketball and Xavier basketball's program, of the sort of disrespected underdog that's always got extra motivation to prove themselves and to knock down those that would sort of criticize or disregard them. And so I think maybe we'll see that. I don't know. I mean, I think it does. I think it certainly does. It certainly does help. It can't hurt. I mean, it's going to be talked about. It's going to be something these guys are aware of. And when you think about some of the personalities on this team, specifically kind of the, I don't know if leader is right, but definitely the emotional compass of this team seems to be Jalen Reynolds and J.P. McCura. And you know those are two guys that are going to react to this in a negative way, most likely. Regardless of how much Coach Mack yells at them in practice, that's an insider taking, you know, shots from outsiders. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if Chris comments on it at all. Obviously they're gonna have to, you know, he's not gonna say anything if Xavier comes out and lays an egg against Marquette tomorrow. But yeah, it's a little bit of intrigue, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. And like I said, I mean, it would be one thing if Chris wasn't probably the most obvious candidate for National Coach of the Year. Now, you can say Bill Self. I saw John Gassaway picked Chris number 2 last week when he wrote his column for top choice of the Coach of the Year. But he chose Bill Self as his Coach of the Year, and the only reason he did that was because he had chosen Bill Self in preseason, and he wanted his preseason prediction to be right. My thing is, there is not an ESPN writer who, in their preseason predictions, didn't have Kansas as the Final Four team. So to say that Bill Self is coaching them to a number 1 ranking as a team that was expected to be a Final Four seed, it's a nice job. I don't know that's Coach of the Year material. There's very few people who had Xavier ranked, period, coming into this year. And now they're a top 5 team. They are going to get a 2 seed at least. And they have a good opportunity to be a team that makes a run in the NCAA tournament. The idea that Chris Mack is not the coach of the year in his own conference is just absurd. And I mean, we could spend plenty of time on that, I think, but it's probably pretty pointless. And like I said, I'm anxious to see. Chris isn't going to comment on this directly, but I'm anxious to see what his comments are after the post game. I'll bring it up to him just for the fun of it, to see what he says tomorrow night. I'm anxious. I think this is going to be fun. Dan, we've watched a game already here tonight. It was brutal. Georgetown, I think, probably, as we've talked about, the most disappointing team in the Big East. DePaul, not much better. My Fighting Blue Demons, not quite getting it done. Any overall thoughts on what we're about to see in this Big East tournament? We've seen the last 2 years some really good basketball. You go back to 2 years ago, we got to see that Doug McDermott versus Bryce Cotton finale, just an outstanding finals. Last year, pretty good. Xavier versus Villanova, I mean, the run to get there was probably better than the actual finals game, obviously, but it was a fun tournament to watch. Right, Nova Creighton, Nova Marquette, both good games. What do you expect to see from this tournament? What are you most anxious to watch about this tournament?
I guess it's a different feel to this year's tournament in that really there are 5 teams in the Big East that are going to make the NCAA tournament, I think, at this point. I think they've separated themselves at this stage. I think Creighton has faded away. And I think, you know, Xavier and Villanova obviously going to be probably 1 and 2 seed in some order. Providence, Butler, Seton Hall, all pretty comfortably in. So the question becomes, how do these teams jockey for position? I'm actually more interested, I guess, because the matchups could really throw this thing into chaos. When you look at Xavier's half of the bracket, let's assume Marquette wins this game. They're up 10 right now. On Xavier's side, you've got Marquette, Creighton, Seton Hall. Those may be the three worst matchups for Xavier in the Big East. On the other side, and even St. John's not a good matchup. Then on the other side for Villanova, you've got they got to play Georgetown in the quarterfinal with Bradley Hayes back, healthy, and then play the winner of Providence and Butler. So maybe the three worst matchups for, other than Xavier, for Villanova in the Big East. And you kind of wonder if Jay and Chris could have swapped sides if they'd have done it. I think they would have. So I think that's the most interesting thing to me. These teams all know each other so well that it's going to be a complete matchup issue. And the other question is, who's going to be that player that elevates themselves, that does what Bryce Cotton and Doug McDermott did, that does what Josh Hart did last year, that we saw LaDonte Henton do last year. Who's going to be the guy that steps forward? Could be, I mean, Isaiah Whitehead would be a good shout. You could look at Miles Davis as a guy that could be, that if he stays on the shooting form that he's been in the last couple games, maybe he's a guy that could separate himself and drag Xavier back to the final. So, I mean, there's a lot of intrigue, and I think tomorrow is going to be a great day of basketball.
I love the two names that you threw out there. I'll give you one more, Keelan Martin. I think Butler needs this. I think they need a good run to move up seed lines. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I said when Butler was very much on the bubble, I said, would it surprise you at all if Butler butlered their way into this thing? And you said, no, not really. And, of course, they've done that. But now they're in a situation where you could very easily see Keelan Martin getting hot, Kellen Dunham getting hot, carrying this Butler team through a Big East championship, and them somehow getting a much better seed than we ever imagined possible, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I agree. I think it could be a very intriguing Big East tournament. Dan, one thing with this Xavier team that I want to talk about, and this is kind of backtracking a little bit, I understand, but we were talking about concerns and all that. One of the things I really like about the Xavier team, and people might think this sounds weird, is that 3 of the 4 losses were throw the game tape out, don't even watch the game film, you can take nothing from them type losses. The fourth was a game in which, for Georgetown, they had a guy go off who didn't even – Trey Campbell, who didn't even score – I'm sorry, he had 4 points tonight in 30 minutes, was 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 3 from three-point range. And we remember the way he torched Xavier in that game. It's very much a fluke game for him. So even that one was a little weird and certainly didn't expose anything about Xavier. To me, I like that. I look at this team and I like – some people say, oh, when they struggle, they can't pull themselves out of that because they're not good defensively or whatever the case may be. I completely disagree with that. I look at this team and say, they've almost every game been able to pull themselves out of this situation, except for these few games, 4 of them, 3 of them maybe, if you want to discount the Georgetown one, where they were complete fluke-type performances. And to be honest, if Xavier has those type of performances where someone either gets ungodly hot against them that isn't supposed to, or they go 1 for 21 from 3 as they did at Creighton, they're not going to advance in the tournament. But at the same time, I don't think any of us expect them to play that way in the postseason. So to me, I think that the fact that 3 of the 4 losses are just, you can't take anything from them, there was nothing that was exposed, there was nothing that showed this team can't live up to the moment or whatever, I think it's a good thing, and I would be encouraged by that if I were a Xavier fan. You have any thoughts on that at all?
Not really. I think that makes sense. I don't feel like there's been a whole lot of situations where teams, well, actually, I mean, one of the interesting things about this year is that Xavier has never had a game come down to last possession. I don't think there's ever been a game this year where a team threw up a shot at the buzzer that would have tied the game, even if it was like a full court heave. So it's been one of those years where Xavier's kind of locked down. I think Xavier's free throw shooting and their ability to work against the press late in games. It doesn't work. It doesn't seem to work from like the 12 to 4 minute mark, but it seems like late in games when they can get the ball to Miles, they can get the ball to Trayvon, they can put out four guys that can really shoot foul shots, and they can really salt games away. And they're going to need to do it this week, because I have a feeling we're going to see one or more of those type of games. But yeah, that's basically it as far as I'm concerned. Any last thoughts?
Let me ask you this. You just brought up an interesting topic. So wouldn't you probably want to see – I mean, last year they had to play a couple of those types of games where it came down to the final possessions, including an overtime game. Would you like to see them maybe have to win one or two of those types of games in this tournament before they get to the NCAA tournament? Even if they happen to lose on a last possession, would you like to see them at least be in that scenario where, hey, we have to figure out who's the guy that gets the ball, what play do we draw up, does that work? At least they've been in that scenario before they get in the NCAA tournament where you're almost undoubtedly going to face that situation at some point.
From academic interest, I would, because I would be curious to know who would have the ball in their hands and what kind of set they would run, and would they ISO, or would they just run their regular offense, or would Chris try and find a way to get into a set play situation, which obviously they're terrific at. Is it necessary? I mean, I don't know that. I mean, honestly, I don't know. The Auburn game last year where they had like three chances to win the game and they missed them all. I don't think that really helped them down the stretch at Seton Hall where they couldn't finish, or at St. John's where they couldn't finish at the end of the game. It certainly didn't help them against Butler where they couldn't finish that game off in the Big East tournament. So not really. I mean, it would be fascinating for me to know who they view as their end of game option.
So let me play devil's advocate on that. I disagree on the Auburn thing. If you remember, the person they ran two of those plays for, Remy Abel, at that point of the year. He was their scorer. He was getting to the line in that game. He was drawing fouls. He was finishing at the rim. But very quickly, because of that Auburn game, I think they found out he's not the guy you want to give the ball and let him make decisions at the end of the game. And they moved on and made Miles or Trayvon that guy, or even Matt Stainbrook in some situations. So, you know, I think there is the argument that they did learn something from that. And I think we could see a similar situation, but that's the exact reason why I think you may want to get in that situation more than once before you get into the tournament, because you may want to see, okay, yes, we think Trayvon's our best guy, and yes, we think we know the play we want to run for him, but maybe you find out that that's just tough to get off in the last 10 seconds or last 7 seconds or whatever it is, the way teams defend you. So I think it would be good for this team. Obviously, it's not a necessity. I think we're in for a great tournament. I got nothing else. You got anything? That does it for this edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick from Madison Square Garden. Thanks for listening, everyone.